Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Here we go, back at it again. Another NFL Draft Bible production. NFL Draft Digest Day 2 coverage of the NFL Draft. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. With me, back again in studio, is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Rev, how's it going today?
It's going fantastic, man. I'm still trying to recover from yesterday. So many surprises, just a lot of excitement all around.
Woo! That was some draft yesterday, Rev. I mean, I think we must have, I don't know if it was just me, it must have been everybody, where it was like, wow. Wow, did that just happen? Was that the pick that was just made? Basically, about once every three picks. That was kind of the reaction yesterday. And we're going to talk about that as well as day two of the draft coming up later tonight at 6 o'clock, the second round and third rounds. Also, we have a bunch of special guests coming on today. Our first guest will be Howard Cross, former New York Giant. He currently does the sideline reporting for the Big Blue. He's also a co-host of This Week in Football, and he does a lot of color commentary for the Ivy League. He'll be coming on to talk about the Giants as well as some SEC football, former Crimson Tide. He's kind of like a proud papa, four Alabama players going in the first round yesterday, and he's very familiar with all of those SEC products, so he'll be happy to talk about those guys. Also coming on, special guest, we have Chris Carter, outside linebacker from Fresno State. Will be joining us, hopefully. We have David Arkin, as well as Chase Reynolds, the running back out of Montana, Ali Agu from Penn State, and Shiloh Keough, the safety out of Idaho. But actually, you know, Rev, looks like we have a caller on the line, so let's kick it off there and see what our caller has to say. Hello, caller. Thanks for joining us. Hello, caller. Okay, I guess not. That was a faulty caller there. But, Rev, since we're not going to go in that direction, let's go where we were planning on going at the top of the show, and that's kind of a little review of what happened yesterday in the first round. And, you know, as I mentioned, there was a lot of wow moments. You know, give me your top one or two wow moments that kind of just blew you off your seat.
Well, I thought, you know, I thought I was gonna lead in with Atlanta trading up for Julio Jones, but then when Tennessee a couple of picks later decided to go with Jake Locker out of all people at the number 8 spot, I mean, that just left me floored, and I'm still, you know, debating why Tennessee went in that direction, why they went so high with Jake Locker. A couple of other things: the Redskins not going for a quarterback in round 1, Costanzo falling to Indy at number 22. And also, one of the moves I disagreed with was the Patriots making their bed with Solder at number 17. That's Nate Solder, the offensive tackle. I just wondered why they didn't go in a different direction, why they didn't go for a defensive player. And if you are going to go for an offensive tackle, why not go with somebody like a Costanzo, a guy like Derek Sherrod, guys like Gabe Kareemi, that I had ranked higher than Nate Solder.
Yeah, definitely some interesting picks there, Rev. And a whole bunch of guys kind of made me scratch my head, either, you know, where they were selected too high or guys that kind of fell further than I thought. I'll say this. I mean, yeah, the Jake Locker one probably was the biggest shocker of all, but it's better than taking Andy Dalton at number 8. Can I throw that out there at least?
Yeah, I understand, but I believe, and rightly so, we have Jake Locker ranked as our number 8 quarterback for a reason. I think that's way too high. Now, look, if they plan on keeping Kerry Collins around for the next 2 or 3 years, maybe I can understand this pick. But, you know, when you're taking a quarterback that high, you're basically telling everybody that this guy is going to be ready this year. Even if it's not in week 1, at some point this upcoming year, during the 2011 season, you expect this guy to step on the field and be your leader, being the starting quarterback of your team. Quite frankly, I don't think Jake Locker is ready to assume that type of role. And so I think it is a big reach to go with Locker this high.
Yeah, I can't argue with it all, Rev. I agree with that 100%. You know, Locker's a kid that I want to like. You know, I think both of us you know, when he was a freshman and a sophomore and you just got glimpses of what he can do, we both were like, wow, this kid seems like he's pretty talented. He's kind of raw, but he looks like he's got a lot of physical ability, not just a runner, but, you know, definitely great running ability, great athletic ability. But it looked like he had a good arm. You know, obviously he was raw, needed to work on his mechanics. The completion percentage wasn't where you wanted it to be.
Yes.
Exactly. The accuracy wasn't where you wanted it to be. So you thought, hey, you know, but maybe with some works he can develop by his junior year, if not by his junior year, definitely by his senior year, into like a real gem, a real finished product. But we just haven't seen that from Jake. I mean, that's the God's honest truth. I mean, you know, 55% completion percentage isn't going to cut it. And, hey, you know, did he have the greatest personnel around him? No, you know, probably not. He probably didn't. But, you know, a lot of these other quarterbacks didn't. Most of the quarterbacks that went yesterday, none of them had, like, you know, a first-round pick receiver going with them. I mean, Florida State doesn't have a big-time playmaker that Christian Ponder played with as a receiver or a running back. You know, at Auburn, as much as I'm not a Cam Newton fan, you know, he had some good running backs, but they didn't have really a big-time receiver. I mean, Darvin Adams, maybe he'll get drafted, but he's not, you know, something that, wow, he made, you know, it's not like he had A.J. Green or Julio Jones that he was thrown to. So, you know, I'm not sure.
Blake.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much I can, you know, cut lock or slack for not having a great team around him.
The one thing I'll give Locker is the fact that he had a horrible offensive line and he was running for his life and he did get banged up during the year. I'll give him that. But then when you took a look at him at the Senior Bowl, when he did have good offensive linemen protecting him, he just didn't perform. And, you know, the thing with me with Locker is that he has the athletic ability. He'll make the occasional amazing throw where he goes outside of the pocket and he just guns that ball. But the thing is that more times than not, I don't see this guy having the instincts to play the position. He doesn't have the awareness, the instincts. A lot of times, you know, he doesn't have the timing that you need. You have to be quick in the NFL. You're not going to have guys that are going to get wide open by like 6, 7, 8 feet. You've got to be able to stick that ball into windows. And I'm not saying he doesn't have the arm to do that, but he doesn't have the accuracy, and the timing and the instincts are not there with him.
Yeah, it was definitely a quizzical pick there. Rev, let me ask you this. Out of the guys that slipped in the first round, which kind of was the biggest surprise to you? Would it be Cameron Jordan going down to 24, Costanzo at 22? He's somebody we thought that could go at number 9, or was it maybe Mark Ingram going to 28 from Alabama?
Well, I kind of expected Ingram to slip down a little because he is a running back, and there's so many running backs nowadays. Over the past couple of years, there are a bunch of running backs that weren't even drafted that end up being 1,000-yard rushers. But, I mean, the total surprises here with me were Cameron Jordan falling as far as he did was a bit of a surprise because there were so many teams out there that had a need at his position at defensive end, whether it be at a 4-3 or a 3-4 defensive end. And the thing that, you know, I think makes Cameron Jordan such an intriguing pick is the fact that he is scheme versatile. You could line him up pretty much anywhere in any scheme. And, you know, you take into account his size, his hands, and the fact that he was productive, and he's got the good bloodlines. You know, let's not forget his daddy also played for the Minnesota Vikings as a tight end, Steve Jordan, for almost about 15 years. He had a very long career. And so when you put all those factors together, I thought Cameron Jordan was going to go a lot higher than he actually did.
It's funny, the two out of the guys that I mentioned both went to the same team, the New Orleans Saints. So you got to think they did pretty well grabbing those guys later on the line. We have a couple people on the line. Rev, let's give that a try again. We have a caller from a 732 area code. Caller, you're on the line.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Pretty good.
I just want to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to get your thoughts on the Jonathan Baldwin pick. Some people may think it's a reach. You know, he was supposed to be mid-second-round pick, but now you look at it, Dwayne Bowen and John Baldwin, that's pretty good targets for Matt Castle. So what do you guys think about that pick?
Well, let me jump in first, and I'll throw it to Ralph because I know which direction he's going, and he's not a big Baldwin fan. I think it's kind of a boom or bust pick you're going with here. You know, Baldwin does have a lot of talent, but he's got a lot of character questions as well. So the question is he going to fulfill that potential? Is he going to fulfill that talent? Definitely Kansas City needed another receiver in this draft, we kind of all felt that maybe where they were picking, there wasn't going to be a guy that was warranted going there. I think they might have done better been served by maybe grabbing a Sherrod, an offensive tackle, and addressing that first. Baldwin does have potential. I mean, if they can kind of corral his attitude, you know, maybe it could turn out to be a good pick. He's somebody that before the year started, some people thought maybe could have even gone higher. And, you know, before Ralph jumps in and starts ripping Baldwin, let me throw it out there that, he didn't play with the best quarterback at all. I mean, you know, we talked about Locker not having a lot of people around him. I mean, Pitt really had some subpar quarterback play.
Not a big fan of Tino Censeri, huh?
Not so much, Rev. Not so much.
Hey, look, the thing with Baldwin is, first off, I'll tell you that I understand why they made that pick. There were a number of teams in picking in the early second round and even in the late first round. I know Chicago was looking at Baldwin, seriously looking at Baldwin, because I know they had a big need for a tall wide receiver. So I understand why they made the pick. I just don't get why you're gambling with this guy so high and making such a big investment in this guy so high in the draft. To me, he's not a first-round pick. To me, he's got the size and the athletic ability, but he doesn't have the work ethic. This guy never really worked hard. He never really maximized his potential. Now, if you think that you have the ego to where you say, hey, you know what, I can work with this kid, I can change him, fine. But you're going to have your hands full with this guy. And he is so unpolished in a lot of the things that he does. He's not a great route runner. He can leap, and he's got the size, but there are so many things in his hands. His hands are not there either. A lot of those passes, they come inside his body. So he's going to have to improve his hands. He's going to have to improve his route running, and he's going to have to improve his work ethic. Those are all big question marks to me. To me, he looks more like a second rounder. I think they reached to get him.
Yeah, he's definitely a boom or bust guy. He's got a high ceiling, but he's also got a very, very low floor as well. So there's definitely a risky pick with Kansas City rolling the dice there, I think. Caller, thanks a lot for the question. We hope you stay on and listen to the entire show. We'll be in the chat room as well if you have any more questions. Now let me see who else we have on the line. I think we have our man, Bo Marchant, calling in as well. Bo, thanks for calling us. What's going on, buddy?
Yeah, you know, I thought I was just listening. What are you guys doing, man?
Well, we're talking a little bit NFL draft over here. What's going on, man?
Nothing, man. I was just enjoying the conversation, listening to you guys talk NFL draft. It's, you know, second day of the draft. What did you guys think of last night?
Well, I mean, I we opened the top by just saying it was definitely like a stunning draft. I think it was a fun draft to watch because it was very unpredictable from most of the picks. I mean, very few players went where we thought they would go. I don't know how many people did well in their mock drafts. I know I didn't do too well in my mock drafts.
No, I didn't at all, man. I don't think I got a pick right until number 20 when Tampa Bay went with Adrian Claiborne. So I was totally going for a loop.
Well, and I think a lot of that is because of what we talked about throughout this process. So many of these defensive linemen had a lot of versatility where could they go to a 3-4 team, could they go to a 4-3 team, are they defensive ends, are they outside linebackers? So because so many of these players are versatile, that opened up so many options for them where they could go to. And then, you know, you just change one pick here, one pick there, and that just throws the whole draft upside down. You know what I mean? The fact that Locker went where he went, the fact that Gabbert slipped and created that trade, you know, that just mixed everything up. How about you, Bo? What did you think of day one, the first round?
Well, I thought free agency definitely played a big part in teams not being able to kind of solidify, especially that quarterback position with the rumors of Cobb and Carson Palmer. Yeah, I think you saw teams kind of – Minnesota panic a little bit. You know, I think they saw Locker go off the board. They might have been interested in Locker themselves. Then you still have Blaine Gabbert. But I think that kind of set in position. Teams kind of get a little bit nervous and – I think Minnesota pulled the plug a little bit too early on a guy like Christian Ponder, but I think that was a result of free agency, not having the ability to sign guys prior to draft day. And, you know, we'll wait and see. I mean, you look at a guy like Ponder, you know, you look at the guy still on the board, you know, could have they dropped down a little bit? I think so. But like you said, it was a day of crazy draft stuff. And you look at tonight I expect the same thing. I mean, you still got four quarterbacks on the board. Stanzi, Dalton, Kaepernick, and Mallett. Who knows where they'll go? Another interesting, you know, day. Does Mallett slip into the third round even? So, you know, crazy first round. I thought some of the teams, guys, that you know, I thought the Colts, what a blessing to get Costanzo where they were sitting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a blessing. Jimmy Smith to the Ravens, I thought that was just a perfect fit for them. So,
yep.
You know, you look at where some of these guys get picked, but, I mean, for the Colts, I mean, could there have been a more perfect player for the Colts in the first round or even the Ravens? I mean, maybe they wanted Prince or Patrick Peterson, but I think defensive back was definitely a need. And unless you don't like a guy like Jimmy Smith, I think they, you know, I think they had a terrific first day.
Well, let me let you guys ponder this. My thinking is that the Washington Redskins at number 10 wanted to take Christian Ponder, and they said, hey, let's just trade down because we could get him if we trade down a few picks later. And lo and behold, they might have been surprised by Minnesota snagging him at 12. So I think sometimes we maybe need to be careful to assume. We always assume, like, when a guy goes higher than he's supposed to, that, hey, you could have gotten him later. Maybe you couldn't have.
Hey, you know something?
I agree.
Yeah, go ahead. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of times, and it's been proven, you take a look at completion percentage, and that is a big indicator as far as how good a quarterback is going to be down the road. And guys, quarterbacks with a completion percentage under 60%, a lot of times, they just don't pan out in the NFL. Well, with a guy like Ponder, here's a guy that comes in with a 62% completion percentage for his career, whereas a guy like Locker was well below that, and then Locker goes number 8. So where a lot of people are talking about Minnesota reaching for Ponder, I think Tennessee would have been better served going with Ponder at 8 than they would have going with Locker at that position. Now, I know that we at the NFL Draft Bible, we're out on an island over here when it comes to Christian Ponder. We happen to think he's the most NFL-ready quarterback, not necessarily the guy with the biggest upside, but the guy that I think is the most prepared to be a starter, you know, in terms of intelligence, in terms of the way he looks off safeties. And the guy is just a smart kid. I mean, he got his undergrad degree in 2.5 years. He already has his graduate's degree. And the guy, the only real question mark about Ponder was his injuries, you know, and he did get hurt a couple of times, but he got checked out at the combine. He got checked out a couple of different times, and the guy is healthy. So, in my opinion, I think the Vikings got themselves a quarterback that could start, maybe even if it's not in week one, he could start maybe after like 4 or 5 games, and he can be their starter, you know, going forward, I think, because, as I said, I think he's hands down the most, you know, NFL-ready quarterback.
All right,
yeah,
Paul,
well, you know,
Paul, I just want to thank you for calling in and giving us a couple of surprise minutes there.
Yeah, like I said, I was just listening. I don't want to, you know, I didn't know when the guests were coming on, guys. I was sitting back listening to a little NFL Draft Bible Radio.
Sounds good, brother. Thanks a lot. We got to get those ratings up.
Appreciate it,
Paul. Yeah. Later, guys. Have a great night.
You too. All right, now it's time for our guest. I thought it was going to be our first guest, but now he's going to be our second guest of the day and our third caller, and that is Howard Cross, former New York football Giant. He's currently the Giants sidelines reporter. He also co-hosts This Week in Football. He's also a color commentator for Ivy League football. In 1989, he was a 6th-round draft choice out of Alabama, 158th overall. He played in 207 games for the Giants, including their 1990 Super Bowl victory over the Buffalo Bills. Howard, thanks a lot for joining us. How's everything going?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good, and we were just, you know, talking about yesterday's first round and what a crazy first round it was. And I was curious if you almost feel a little bit like a proud papa with 4 Alabama Crimson Tide going in round 1.
You know, you do feel proud, you know, seeing these guys go. But Marcell Dareus, you know, incredible player. The kid's explosive, making plays all over the field, inside or outside. He's going to be a great, great pickup for the Bills. Then you see Julio Jones running, I think, a 4.29 in the combine at that size. It's going to be a scary receiver in the NFL opposite, you know, White in Atlanta. And Vic Carpenter, you know, was a surprise for us, but, you know, he was a great player. Saban got him in there, put him in left tackle, did a great job. He'll come to the NFL, probably switch over to right tackle. And, of course, you know, the kid himself. You got to love little Mark Ingram, you know, watching him grow up as a kid, seeing him, you know, coming into a locker room at 3 and 4 years old, and now drafting, you know, coming out of Alabama to play for the New Orleans Saints, and they definitely need a back. And in case you guys don't know, Reggie Bush tweeted today, and it looks like basically goodbye has been caught.
I did see that tweet, and I did get a kick out of it, Howard. Let me ask you, as a follow-up to those guys, were you more surprised that Carpenter went as high as he did or that Ingram slipped to where he did?
Well, you know, I'm probably more surprised that Carpenter went as high as he did. You know, Ingram was being the best back in the league. Ran a decent 40. He's really in between the tackle guy. He's going to get hard yards. He's going to be very tough and durable for you throughout his career in the NFL. But running backs today aren't running backs of yesterday. And by that, I mean there are no more Emmitt Smiths, Rodney Hanson, you know, Thurman Thompson, guys that's your guy. He's the guy that's going to carry the load. You can't think of the backup running back when you had one of those guys. Now everybody splits time. You know, even Adrian Peterson, Chris Johnson, they all split time with someone. And there's no, you know, focal running back. Because, you know, these guys get dinged up, they get banged up. So you got to have two good backs instead of one great, great back.
Hey, Howard, Ralph Mancini here. A lot of guys, us included, you know, prior to the draft, we were talking about Patrick Peterson arguably being the best player overall in this upcoming draft. The Arizona Cardinals took him number 5. What do you think about Peterson? Do you agree that he is the safest pick out of all of these players that went in the first round?
A lot like Ingram, you know, value changes pretty quickly. Think about Patrick Peterson this way. At 6'2", over 220 pounds, how long does he have before he actually is in a corner anymore and he's a safety? So you're picking a guy 5th pick overall. I mean, the value that they pay from a salary cap standpoint is greatly different between a great corner and a great safety. It just is. You know, safeties don't make, you know, $12, $14 million a year. Corners do.
That's an interesting point, Howard. I have not heard many people bring that up at all, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how his career pans out and if that ends up being his path. Let me ask you about a couple of other SEC guys. Your rival, the Auburn Tigers, the War Eagles. I got to be honest, Howard, I'll throw it out there. I'm a huge, huge Nick Fairley fan. I was surprised he slipped. I know he's got some character issues, but I think he is a beast on the field, and I can't wait to see him team up with Sue. Well, actually, I'm more concerned about Cam Newton's intangible issues because he's a quarterback. I think that it's more significant at that position than any other. What's your take on those two guys?
Well, we'll go Nick Fairley first. You know, guys, when you talk about off-the-field issues and character issues, you know, remember this. Above all else, these guys are people. So you might be getting a great player, but the person that you're getting is just as valuable as the player you're getting. And if the person can't be trusted, the player can't be trusted. And I'm not saying that Nick Fairley's a bad guy. I'm not saying Nick Fairley's ever had problems. Matter of fact, I don't know anything outside of his ability on the field. But when they're, you know, promoting that and advertising and talking about that there's a potential for this kid to have some off-the-field issues or needs to be motivated, anytime I hear the words needs to be motivated, needs to be, you know, watched because of off-the-field issues, that points out to me that this, you know, a maturity factor that you can't count on. And with Nick Fairley, you give this kid $30 million, if he wasn't mature before, he's really not going to be mature after that fact. On the other hand, he's coming into a situation where he's playing beside Ndamukong Suh. Now, this kid was named last year by some pundit the Scooby-Doo monster. So that having to play beside a guy that intense, that might make you grow up a little bit. Now, as far as Cam Newton goes, kid's a specimen. Looks great, looks the part, $1 million smile, the great arm. He can throw the ball all over the field. He has, you know, all these great, great abilities. Only issue that I got with Cam is when Gruden, who's that lovable, you know, always gives that great interview with the coach's class or quarterback class, when he asks him specifically, give me one of your favorite plays from Auburn. and there was no answer. And they basically said that Auburn held up a number, and everyone ran the number. You know, that's where the league is kind of going to. And I do mean the, you know, college ranks, because with 20 hours a week, you can't train a kid to read coverages, know every play, know everything. And coaches are, they're responsible to win games. They're not responsible to the NFL. They're responsible to win games. If you get a great talented kid, whether it's Cam Newton or any other quarterback, and you watch a game and that entire offense looks to the sideline and then they snap the ball, you know that those kids aren't really listening to play.
Yeah, that concerns me a lot as well. That means you're projecting a lot, and we joke around here that Auburn offense was kind of the one-and-run offense. It was basically one read, and if that guy wasn't open, Cam would tuck it and run, and he was a dominant college player, Howard. But you brought up the reading the defenses, and it seems to me I didn't see great vision from him throwing the football in terms of, you know, throwing the ball into tight windows as well as leading his receivers to open spaces.
Well, what's going to happen is that the Carolina Panthers are going to have a quarterback coach, Mike Shula. Mike's going to get in there if they're allowed to. I know that they say they're allowed to, but Mike's got to get in there, sit down with Cam. First thing he's got to do, give him the playbook and get him on the verbiage. Right off the bat, the verbiage is going to be huge for Cam. Saying it out loud, repeating it, understanding what it means, learning to do the read and understanding where guys are, that comes with time. You know, there's only one, Alex, guy that comes in one day like Roethlisberger. All of a sudden, the team's in the playoffs. There's only one guy who shows up, and all of a sudden, he's doing, you know, Matt Ryan everything right. You know, Matt Ryan and Flacco and Roethlisberger spoiled everyone. That's not what quarterbacks do. Sanchez, you know, they had the red, green and yellow sign on the sideline showing them, all right, there's how much we're willing to risk this play. Red means no. And, you know, you pick a guy's fifth overall, you expect that guy to know something. But even guys coming out right now, they just don't know everything. Your football IQ has to grow greatly to play this game. And, you know, that's what Cam's going to have to do. He's going to have to get a football IQ. Right now he's got the glitz and glamour. But next, he's got to get a football IQ.
And we're talking to Howard Cross, former New York Football Giant, current Giant sideline reporter. Hey, Howard, you know, staying on the quarterbacks theme, do you find it kind of strange that Ryan Mallett fell all the way to the second round? I mean, we're assuming he's going to get picked in the second round. But, I mean, the fact that he fell so far, I mean, do you find it kind of strange that, you know, a guy like, for instance, Jake Locker, who I think is a little bit more raw than Ryan Mallett and probably not as talented overall, do you find it strange that a guy like Locker went ahead of Ryan Mallett, a guy that probably has the best arm among all the quarterbacks in this draft? I mean, I understand the character issues and all that, but when you take a look at pure talent, I mean, I don't think a lot of these guys, especially a guy like Locker, measures up with a guy like Ryan Mallett. What are your thoughts on him?
First off, you know, there's two things. I'll speak to the first thing first. I'll keep saying it over and over. Character issues are extremely important, especially if the character that you're worried about is your quarterback. You don't want the face of your franchise to have any issues. You want to be an upstanding citizen, leading the way at all your charity events. You don't want anything. And remember, now if you do something wrong, they don't hear about it next week. They hear about it that night. And they hear about it before anybody else does because it's on the web. If you do something wrong, you're an instant celebrity whether you want to be or not. And doing something wrong isn't doing something wrong to say you did something illegal. You're in a hot tub full of women. You're you know, someone takes a picture, you're around the world. So that's character issues. Teams worry about that. That's something that he has to work on. And, you know, the questions they were asking him, they were tough questions. Were you drinking? Are you an alcoholic? Do you have problems with drugs? Have you been, you know, those are tough questions. When you're growing up and you're doing something, kind of like they used to tell you, like your grades hang out with you all the way through college, even even into your quote unquote your resume for your jobs, your character issues do also. Same thing with your Facebook and pictures. Now, as far as talent goes, he's got a cannon. He can throw a ball all over the field. Awesome. Here's the issue. All the quarterbacks drafted before him, they're relatively mobile. And having a guy that can run and move in the pocket and get away and have some escapability, that's a value that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger has made popular, that Aaron Rodgers has made popular, that, you know, I hate to say it, but Michael Vick made popular. These are guys that are very successful. They're not standing in the pocket taking big hits every time. And if they need to get on the edge, they'll run a few steps.
Hey, Howard, before we move on to the Giants and your thoughts on their pick there, what's your thoughts on the kid Pouncey out of Florida? I find it kind of interesting that he ended up going higher than his brother did, and I'm not quite sure he's going to be as good as Marquise. What do you think?
Well, all I can go back to is game one, Florida playing somebody. I can't remember the name, but I do remember the six snaps on the ground to the quarterback in the shotgun. That kind of thing resonates with me. Like, okay, if you know you're going to play quarterback, I mean, if you know you're going to play center, be able to snap the ball to your quarterback. I remember that. I mean, I know he played better and got better as the year went on, but I remember that. Now, he's projected as a guard. He's probably a better guard. But if he has to play center, that's something that you got to remember. Snapping the ball on the ground, that's tough.
Hey, Howard, you know, moving over to the Giants and what they did yesterday. Now, I get the fact that, you know, the Giants are a team that always or about 95% of the times takes the best athlete out there, irrespective of what position he plays at. But, you know, looking at, you know, some of the New York Giant deficiencies and areas in need, I mean, I'm taking a look at that offensive line, and they've been playing for years now with the guy at left tackle who's really a guard. And they had, like, their pick of the litter, you know, in terms of offensive tackles yesterday. You know, they could have had a guy like Anthony Costanzo. You talk about character. I mean, this kid is a biochemistry major who wants to find a cure for cancer when he's done playing football. So, you know, you really can't mention criticize the guy for his lack of character. And they could have had him right there, but instead decided to go for a cornerback. Again, I understand their level of thinking. Prince Amakimura was higher on their board. But now at this point, you went with the cornerback in the first round. Where are you going to find that offensive tackle that could play on the left side? Those guys don't grow on trees. It's hard to find them. A lot of times, if you don't get that guy in the first round, you're not going to find him.
How many linemen were drafted in the first round? A lot, right? The offensive line and defensive line littered the draft this year. How many cornerbacks were drafted in the first round, too? The idea that you can find a really good corner, maybe three. The idea that you can find a really good corner is just as tough as finding a really good offensive tackle. The problem is that as the year goes on, they'll be able to pick up linemen. You're not going to be able to pick up a guy who's going to be able to cover Jackson in Philly. You're not going to be able to pick up a guy that's going to be able to cover Dez Bryant in Dallas. And those two teams are the teams that keep going back to the playoffs year in and year out that you're battling against. You know, you got Corey Webster, had some injury issues. When he went down, there was really no one there to kind of back him up. You got on the team, you got Aaron Ross, a very good player, but a lot of injury issues. You got really one corner playing for the Giants for most of the season, and a lot of guys basically walking in off the street to try to help out. So if you go get a guy, you know, you got a line that you can keep matching, mixing and matching guys and get a couple guys for. So if you get a corner that's that good, that kind of fell to you in that moment, it's almost impossible not to take.
Howard, how about today? What do you think they might do tonight in the second round? Will they definitely look to address offensive line? I actually did a second-round mock that we posted on the NFL Draft Bible website this morning, and I kind of did the same thing they did yesterday. I know they needed offensive line, but I had Kyle Rudolph going there, the tight end out of Notre Dame, because he was the best player available, and I think, you know, maybe they could use an upgrade. That's your former position. Do you think it's any possibility they could grab somebody like Rudolph today if he was available?
I think look for him today to look for a linebacker. Look for him today to look for that guy that can come in and actually contribute to the team. You got a guy like Clinton Simpson that they picked up who really hasn't come into his own, and you got some other guys that are just kind of you can't just have guys that are special teams players. You need guys to actually come in and actually make plays. And a second-round pick, if it's an offensive lineman, if it's a you know, linebacker, two positions that they really need, those are the two guys that you got to really think about. If there are two positions you really need to think about and have an eye out for if they're there. You know, the kid that everybody had, the number one player in the draft until he hurt his knee, you know, how many more teams are going to pass on him? You know, that kid falls to the Giants, second round, hey, they'll take a two-year career out of him, a three-year career out of him. You got to find guys that can actually come in. Those first three picks, they got to be guys that come in and make plays. They can't just be guys that come in and be on your team. It's great to pay them money. It's great to celebrate them, but they got to come in and be on the field immediately and start having an impact.
And we know Mr. Reese there, he doesn't mind collecting defensive ends if the right one is on the board. Howard, before we let you go, let's go out on this note. Let's take a little trip down memory lane. What was it like back in 1989 when the New York Giants called your name in the sixth round, tight end Howard Cross out of the University of Alabama? What was that week and that experience like for you?
It was pretty cool. You know, the Giants came down to Alabama a couple times and worked me out. They wanted me to, do a few things, run a few 40s, catch a few balls. And because I had been hurt when I went to the combine, they wanted me to lift weights. And at that time, I held almost every weightlifting, powerlifting record that they had, from cleans to jerks to, you know, snatches. They're like, wow, you're pretty good. Can you bench press? I'm like, we don't bench press. They're like, well, forget about it. And I was really shocked that they drafted me, but very happy at the same time. I mean, it was a pretty cool experience coming up to New York after never really being in the metropolitan area and finally playing with the Giants, playing with guys like Lawrence Taylor, you know, Mark Bavaro, Phil Sims, little Joe Morris, Otis. It was great. I had a great time. But, guys, before I let you go, you know, prayers go out to all people in the Tennessee Valley area with all the tornadoes and in Tuscaloosa. I mean, it's devastated down there, and just prayers and thoughts and wishes go out to them.
Definitely, for sure, Howard, for sure, and to you and yours as well.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Thanks a lot. And that is Howard Cross, former New York Giant, current Giant sideline reporter, as well as co-host of This Week in Football, and he covers Ivy League football, and obviously being a former Alabama Crimson Tide, he's pretty well-versed in the SEC as well. You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. If you just joined us, we just had Howard Cross on the line. Also, our man Beau Marchant chimed in for a couple of minutes, and we're hoping to have a couple of the players calling in sometime today, guys that may get drafted today, guys that may get drafted tomorrow, maybe even guys that may not get drafted at all. I'm going to be in limbo for a little while with this whole NFL lockout labor issue kind of hanging up in the air, a lot of uncertainty. We heard a report earlier today that maybe the lockout was going to be back in effect, then ESPN kind of took it back. Apparently they were a little premature with what they were reporting there. But let's talk a little bit more about day two and what's coming up and kind of previewing day two for the folks, second round, third round. Let's start at that quarterback position. You know, Christian Ponder, Blaine Gabbert, Cam Newton, and Jake Locker are off the board. According to our rankings, the number one quarterback is Ryan Mallett, available, somebody we just spoke about earlier with Howard. And, you know, some people, Rev, have said he might slip out of day two, that he could go into the fourth round. I mean, could you fathom that?
No, honestly, I can't. I mean, look, if you don't want to make the guy a first-round pick, I can understand it. And actually, it might make some sense because if he just drops down to second round, maybe that might motivate him in some, you know, kind of perverse type of way. But you take a look at this guy, and it's not only just about the arm. I mean, this guy played for one of the better head coaches, one of the better offensive head coaches in Bobby Petrino in college football. This guy made throws that a lot of these other guys could only dream of making. And then you take a look at the size, and you take a look at the fact that, hey, I know that he's not the most mobile guy out there, but if you watch his games during the year, he actually did make some plays outside of the pocket. So it's not like he's totally useless. We're not talking about Neil O'Donnell or Ken O'Brien here for you Jet fans, okay? He's not that useless outside of the pocket. So I think that I cannot imagine him falling out of the second round. I would be totally shocked if that happened.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, but then again, I'm totally shocked that Jake Locker went ahead of him, and everybody seems to assume Andy Dalton is going to go ahead of him as well. I find this, you know, listen, man, I don't want to try to sound like we're smarter than everybody because we get picks wrong. Everybody
sure.
gets picks wrong. Even the smartest GMs gets a decent amount of their picks wrong. But I do find it somewhat comical from time to time when, you know, suddenly everybody's acting as if, it's been a foregone conclusion that Andy Dalton was going to be a first-round pick for, like, the last year or so. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I did not hear anybody call this kid a first-round pick until, you know, a week, maybe 2 weeks ago. And suddenly everybody at the same time saw it. Like, you know, were they all watching the same film together in the same room to have that collective consciousness to come with the same opinion at the same time, or people just copycatting each other? They hear one team thinks he's a first-round pick, and suddenly everybody wants to jump on it and say, yeah, he's a first-round pick.
That's just one of the things that always happens in the NFL. There's this monkey-see, monkey-do mentality. And, you know, from what I'm hearing, the Cincinnati Bengals actually tried to trade into the first round, into the back end of the first round last night to pick Andy Dalton. And look, I mean, not to denigrate Andy Dalton, but if you're comparing him to Ryan Mallett, I mean, there's no comparison. Andy Dalton, while he's smart and he was very productive in college, he played in a system where oftentimes they didn't ask him to throw a lot of passes that went beyond 10 to 12 yards. So, you know, let's keep that into consideration here. To me, based on skill set alone, I think Andy Dalton is a mid-round type of pick. He's a third or fourth round type of pick. Now, because this draft class in terms of quarterbacks isn't very strong, I think a lot of times people are trying to hype up a lot of these guys. They're trying to make, you know, something out of nothing, or they're trying to, you know, make a mid-round pick into a first-round pick, and I think that's wrong. Let's be realistic here. You know, Andy Dalton doesn't have a great arm. He doesn't have great athletic tools. He's a smart kid. He could be a serviceable quarterback. He could be a game manager. But to tell me that he's even in Ryan Mallett's league in terms of talent or upside, no way. I don't buy that argument at all.
And I think it's funny, too, when people are questioning our guy Christian Ponder and you know, his physical abilities to suddenly be in love with Ryan, you know, with Andy Dalton as if he's this big, strapping, strong, you know, quarterback with this rocket arm. I mean, you know, Ponder's 15 pounds heavier than Dalton is, and I think Ponder has a better arm. Anyway, so we touched upon Mallett. We touched upon Andy Dalton, who a lot of people expect could go first today if somebody trades up, and probably won't last more than three or four selections, and Cincinnati will grab him when their pick comes up. Who else should we keep an eye on at the quarterback position going either in the second or third round today?
I think the quarterback that you would want, if you need a quarterback at this point, is Colin Kaepernick. I mean, you're not only talking about tremendous height at about 6 feet, 5 inches and a half, nearly 6'6". He did put on a lot of weight, and he's got a rocket of an arm. And you want to talk about athleticism? Well, here's a kid that ran out of that pistol formation and made a lot of his yards on the ground running the ball. So I think this guy offers you an interesting collection of talents, of skills. And he is a little raw. He is a guy that I don't know right now if you tried to plug him in as a starter, if he'd be able to read through all of his progressions. I don't know if he's ready to do that yet. But I think if you grab him, if you're like a team like the Oakland Raiders, and by the way, I'm hearing that Al Davis loves Colin Kaepernick, if you pick him up, I think for the Raiders, that would be a great situation since they already have Jason Campbell right there. They could groom Kaepernick behind Jason Campbell, and let him learn how to read defenses, because in terms of talent and tools, this guy's upside is through the roof.
Yeah, I think I did have Oakland taking, not in my mock that I did today, but in my previous mock, I had them taking Colin Kaepernick. Today I had the Redskins taking them with the second round, as things shook out a little differently, as they always do when you do one mock after another. Rev, let's move on from the pass throwers to the pass catchers, the wide receiver position. We talked a little bit about Mr. Jonathan Baldwin, who is the third wide receiver taken. And I think there's going to be a whole bunch of wide receivers going off the board today. You know, some of the key names, I think, are our number three guy, who's our best available wide receiver, Greg Little, my man out of North Carolina, 225-pounder, who's got a 40-and-a-half-inch vertical leap, really athletic kid, great after the catch. Also, Randall Cobb, Titus Young, two kind of smaller guys who are very good after the catch, also have returnability, as does Torrey Smith, who's more of a stretch-the-field kind of guy. Who are your, let's say, top two wide receivers available heading into today, you know, second round?
Well, as you know, I love those big receivers, but, you know, in this year's draft, you just don't have a lot of guys who are 6'3", 6'4", and that could be difference makers. Not in the second round anyway. I think that's one of the reasons why Kansas City went with Jonathan Baldwin, because of that paucity of big, huge receivers out there. So my next two guys are going to be speed guys. If I need a receiver, I'm going to look for those guys that can stretch the field, as you said before. And the two guys that jump out at me are Torrey Smith out of Maryland and then Titus Young out of Boise State. These guys are both dynamic players. They know how to get open. They could make a lot of those short catches and turn them into big plays. And they can also go down the field and make those spectacular over-the-shoulder type of plays as well. So, I mean, if I need a receiver, those would be the first two guys that I'm looking at.
Yeah, a couple of interesting guys. Cobb is definitely a guy that we've had going in the second round for a while. Some other names that we could see going today are Mr. Leonard Hankerson, the wide receiver out of Miami, who had a very good senior campaign. A kid we had on not too long ago, Jarrell Jernigan out of Troy. Once again, one of those diminutive slot-type guys who also will contribute as a special teams player. Edmund Gates out of Abilene Christian, I think, is a really fast riser. A lot of people rate him higher coming out at this point in time than Johnny Knox, who came out of Abilene 2 years ago for the Chicago Bears, who obviously has been a very productive guy. And we know it's not always fair, it's not always accurate, but that type of stuff doesn't hurt. You know, just like with the Pouncey thing, the fact that his twin brother is doing pretty well, I don't think that hurt Pouncey. The fact that, you know, Johnny Knox didn't flame out and has been a contributing receiver on the Bears can't hurt a kid like Edmund Gates coming out of the same school.
Well, honestly, I think with a guy like Gates, and I get the fact that he is a burner, I don't know, I haven't seen enough of him. I mean, I've watched highlight film of him, but I haven't seen him do it against top defenses. You know, if I'm at that point of the draft where, let's say, I'm in the third round and I'm still looking for a wide receiver, I'd rather go with a guy like Austin Pettis.
Well, Jerry Rice didn't do it against top receivers either. I mean, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes there are these small school gems.
Well, look, Jerry Rice was a guy that came into the league and he was a little raw himself. He used to drop a lot of passes in his rookie year. The reason why he became who he eventually became, which is arguably the number one receiver of all time, was because he worked harder than everybody else.
Sure, but he had some physical ability. You can't rule out a kid and say, well, he's a small school guy, so you can't take him in the first two rounds.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is that if I'm in the third round, I'd rather go with a guy like Austin Pettis. I'm not saying that Gates is a guy you shouldn't draft, but if I'm looking at Pettis versus Gates, I'd rather go with Pettis because I've seen him perform against a lot of top cornerbacks.
I might go outside and beat Pettis in a race right now in front of the studio.
I'd like to see you do that.
With that 4.6 140 that he threw out there. And Rev, before we move on, I think another sleeper guy, maybe he could sneak into the third round, another small school speedster, Ricardo Lockett from Fort Valley State. I know Aldrick Robinson at SMU is another guy that teams are liking. 5'9", 182 pounds. Obviously, Sanders came out of TCU last year, helped Pittsburgh a lot. And I left two guys there that intrigued me a lot that I still kind of like. Two seniors, that had a very high grades heading into the year. We talked about this during the wide receiver show. That is Terrence Tolliver out of LSU, 6'3", 212 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And then also Niles Paul out of the University of Nebraska, 6'1", 225 pounds with a 4.47 40-yard dash. And both of them, you know, didn't have productive senior campaigns. But let's be honest, neither one of them had, you know, a crisp quarterback there. You know, we mentioned Sunseri before. He wasn't really much worse than Jordan Jefferson or Taylor Martinez in terms of the passing skills.
Yeah, with Terrence Tolliver, I mean, the thing that you question about him is his strength. He's a long kid, but he's kind of a skinny kid. You wonder whether or not he's going to be physical enough to flourish at the next level. But I do like his skill set. I mean, this guy is just dynamite. He showed it to you sporadically, as Dan said, because of his lack of talent at the quarterback position at LSU. But, you know, those plays that he did make, I mean, he was a game changer. I remember that one game against Florida where he just turned things around for LSU, where he was able to turn around, make some quick moves, grab a 10-yard out or an 8-yard out and turn it into a 50-yard touchdown pass. So I think Tolliver is a high upside guy. I don't think we've seen the best out of Tolliver. And I think if you grab him in the third round, I think that's the perfect place to take him because, to me, I think the best is ahead of him.
Yeah, I think a pair of intriguing guys. Let's move on from wide receiver to the tight end position. And, Ralph, there's a couple interesting tight ends. No tight ends went in the draft yesterday. Obviously, Kyle Rudolph is our number one guy. Virgil Green is right up there with them in terms of having a sure, solid second-round grade. Although, I got to be honest, when I did my second-round mock this time around, I couldn't find a spot for Virgil Green, especially with the Falcons now not having a second-round pick. It doesn't seem that there's that many teams that have a high priority on tight ends.
Yeah, you're right. But there are a few guys out here. I don't think tight end is a terribly deep position this year, but there are a number of guys that are extremely talented and athletic. You're not going to find a lot of guys that can do it all in terms of blocking the defensive end. You're going to see a lot of guys out there that you could split out wide, more of the pass-catching type tight ends out there. And I think, like, you know, you have a guy like DJ Williams. Is he a real tight end? I don't know. He could be an H-back or fullback. He's a little bit undersized. He's not extremely quick in and out of his cuts. I'm not too high on DJ Williams. But to me, I'll take a look at a guy like Rob Housler, one of the smaller school kids out of Florida Atlantic. Now, this kid can't block his way out of a paper bag, but what he can do is he can run multiple routes. He can go over the middle. He's tough. He hangs on to the ball. He's got the ability to make those catches outside of his frame. So I think that this guy, he can operate almost as an extra receiver. So I think he's one of the guys to look at, especially in the third round.
And a couple other names to throw out there before we move on to our next guest, Lance Kendricks out of Wisconsin, another potential H-back type guy. Although I got to say, my man Lance, he's not afraid to mix it up and block. He plays stronger than his size. He's a very strong kid. He's a physical kid, and he likes to mix it up. The boomer bust guy is Jordan Cameron, former basketball player. I think people are hoping to find the next Daniel Graham with him out of USC. You mentioned Housler, Florida Atlantic, who I also like. And then Luke Stocker out of Tennessee, who could go today, is on the other end of the spectrum. Not really that athletic. We said out of most of these tight ends, often that you can close your eyes and you think there's a wide receiver catching the ball. They're that acrobatic and they have that kind of balance. Stocker is more of the classic tight end, isn't going to do much for you in the open field, but probably a better blocker than the rest of these guys. Ralph, you mentioned some guys can't block their way out of a paper bag. Some of them can block their way out of a steel cage. And one of those is Mr. David Arkin Missouri State, who's joining us right now. David, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good to be here. Hello?
Hello, David. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Let me give it another try. I believe he's on the line.
Yeah.
David, are you with us?
I can hear you. Hello?
Hello? All right. We got you, David. How's
okay.
It going, my man? How's everything going?
I'm good. Good. It's going good.
All right. So we're, here day two of the draft. Second, third round is tonight. Quickly, before we get into your status, what did you do yesterday? Were you watching the full draft, sitting in front of your couch, debating the picks with the analysts like we do, or were you just, you know, out to the movies doing something else? What was your game plan last night?
No, I went over to a friend's house, hung out a little bit. I caught maybe the last 10 picks of the first round. I didn't follow it too closely, but that's about what I did.
Hey, David, Ralph Mancini here. You know, you've proven to be an aggressive blocker who just pancakes the opposition. And there's no doubt, in my opinion, that you're strong enough to play at the next level. But, you know, at this point, where do you think you stand technique-wise?
That's definitely something, you know, I obviously need to work on and, you know, continue to improve. And I feel like I've made big strides since the season ends, and you know, I'm learning new stuff, and I'm, you know, feeling more comfortable with my technique. So, you know, you could get away with some stuff at the lower level that obviously you're not going to be able to get away with in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. And you were an academic All-American. You know, how important is it for an offensive lineman to be cerebral? You know, talk to us about the mental part of the game.
I think it's, you know, that's one of the most important parts of the game. You know, you got blitzes coming from everywhere. You got to, you know, identify fronts, decide, you know, who to block. And, you know, if you're not executing right on the offensive line, the offense isn't going to get much done.
Hey, David, let me ask you, you know, I asked you earlier, what did you do last night? What are your plans moving forward for day two of the draft and into tomorrow? What are you planning on doing tonight and tomorrow?
Tonight, I'm probably just going to, me and my teammate, I think, are going to go out to the offensive line, our offense, college offensive line coach's house, and have dinner, maybe just relax a little bit, and, you know, hopefully, you know, watch the draft.
And what have you heard, you know, from your advisors? What have they told you about this weekend to kind of prep you and get you ready in terms of your expectations?
You know, I was talking to my agent last night and talking about guys that had gone the first round. They had a couple guards go pretty high. So, you know, that kind of bodes well for me. You know, hopefully it'll be a bit of a run on them today, and you know, I might slip into that third round. That's you know, it's a little on the high end for me, but it's definitely possible from what I hear.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. I mean, it's not written in stone, but I don't think that would be a stretch at all, David. And let me ask you this: on that note, you know, do you think you've done enough in this off season, and are you happy with what you've done during this draft process to kind of prove to people, most importantly, the scouts and the teams, that you do in fact belong with the big boys, the big names from the big universities?
Yeah, I think, you know, I feel comfortable with what I've done. I feel like every step of the way that I've, you know, got my name out there a little bit more, and, you know, maybe taking another, you know, gotten another notch or two up on the draft ladder. So, you know, I'm comfortable with everything I did, and I feel like I, you know, did it right. So, I mean, it's out of my hands now, so we'll see what happens.
Hey, David, one more for you. You know, for our fans out there, for our listeners that might not be familiar with David Arkin, you know, talk about some of the things that set you apart from the rest of the pack at the guard position. You know, you were a guy that played predominantly tackle in college, so talk about your versatility, your leadership skills. You were a two-time captain. Talk about some of those things that set you apart.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a guy, you know, like you said, two-year captain. I played some right guard, played some left tackle in college. I'm comfortable on either side of the ball, guard, tackle, and you know, I've been working on center, trying to get comfortable there. So I feel like I'm a guy that can, you know, play maybe four or five positions on the line, which I think is valuable to an NFL team. And then, you know, the thing I try and bring to my game is, you know, a little bit of nastiness, meanness. I like to play through the whistle and finish blocks, and I think that's what sets me apart from other guys. I've, you know, heard from a couple different people that I'm they're one of the meanest guys they've seen coming out this year. So I, you know, I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, we definitely saw a lot of that meanness, a lot of that nastiness in the East-West Shrine game.
All right, David, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. We really appreciate it. I know this is a special weekend for you and your family and everything. So, you know, enjoy dinner tonight with your teammate and your coach, and hopefully we can hear your name called sometime in the third round.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. That is David Arkin out of Missouri State. Real sleeper, Rev. I know somebody that you're a big fan of.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I think you hit the nail on the head. When you take a look at David Arkin, it's that meanness, it's that aggressiveness that he gives to you all day long on the football field. I mean, if you watch him in the East-West Shrine game, he just totally pancaked some guys. And this is the type of guy that you want at the guard position. And as he mentioned, he's versatile as well. We're not talking about a guy who played guard in college. He actually played tackle. He played on both sides. So here's a guy that could do well in pass protection as well as being an asset versus the run, in the running game, I should say.
All right, moving on to our next guest then, which is David Arkin. Our next man on the line is Chase Reynolds from Montana, another sleeper small school product that has impressed us during this draft process. Chase, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. We really appreciate the time. We know how important these days are to you guys, so even if you give us a couple of minutes, I appreciate it so much. And I asked this to David, so let me lead it off to you as well. Were you like me and Ralph were with your face, you know, eyeballs glued onto that TV, as well as our man Rick, who was covering it at the draft, or were you kind of just doing your thing, what you would have done on any old Thursday night?
You know, I watched it a little bit. You know, I obviously wasn't glued too much because, you know, I know that I definitely, you know, not much is going to come out of watching it, you know, other than just being interested in who was, you know, the top picks. But, you know, I watched most of it and then kind of shut the TV off and had a little game night with my family. So that's what I did.
And, you know, when we spoke to David, he brought up the fact that, you know, it was interesting to him that he's a guard and three guards went in the first round. Did you take notice or did you have any thoughts on the fact that, you know, Mark Ingram dropped to 28 and he was the only running back taken yesterday?
I did, and that was kind of a, you know, I was hoping a little more running backs were kind of going to get picked up early. And I did see that, and I kind of sighed a little bit because, you know, like I said, him dropping and just kind of, it makes it tougher on guys like us getting late round picks. So,
hey, Chase, I guess at this point you're getting all types of information regarding, you know, where you're going to get drafted. But why is it, in your opinion, why is it that so many running backs fall through the cracks every year? It seems like, you know, like guys like Peyton Hillis come out of nowhere to dominate. You know, even guys like Arian Foster and LeGarrette Blount were two guys that went undrafted and they turned out to be spectacular receivers. Arian Foster, 1,000-yard runner, one of the better backs in the NFL. Why do you think that happens at the running back position in particular?
You know, I don't know if it's the hype that they give the guys that are getting drafted or whatnot. I mean, I know personally from my experience, I mean, just being the underdog and being the guy that you know, they don't want to take because, you know, certain reasons gives you a motivation that these guys that are high up in the draft that I don't think they have, that they don't get, you know. It was kind of the same as for me coming out of high school into college. So many people told me that I couldn't and that, you know, I was too small and all this stuff. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I myself, and I'm sure these other guys that are, you know, free agencies or late round draft picks, I mean, they take that and they, you know, it builds inside of them and they, you know, they're out on a mission to prove everybody wrong. So I think to me that would, you know, personally, that's kind of where I'm at. So, and I'm sure those guys have the same feelings.
And we're talking to Chase Reynolds out of the University of Montana. He's rushed for over 4,000 yards in his career, 52 rushing touchdowns each year, over 5 yards per carry, and just as impressive, 95 receptions in his career coming out of the backfield.
Well, yeah, that is impressive. And as a matter of fact, last time we spoke, Chase, you know, we did bring up the fact that you were a former wide receiver, so you do bring that to the table, the fact that you can catch the football. But I don't remember asking you about your blocking. Is that something that you did a lot of in college in terms of picking up the blitz and stuff like that?
It was my first 2 years when I started. I mean, I was, you know, every down, if I wasn't getting the ball, I was in pass protection. And surprisingly, you know, I would say I'm up there with the better when it comes to blocking, even for my size and my type and whatnot. You know, when I do it, I bring my whole body, and I've been, you know, very successful in pass blocking as well. So, you know, I bring that to the table too. And, you know, like I said, over the years, I've learned techniques and stuff that have just helped me get in positions and stuff to block. So done quite a bit of it, the first 2 years, and then this last year, not so much, just because of the fact I was more of the, you know, if I wasn't getting the ball, they'd want me on the flats. So it kind of screwed off a little bit here in this last season.
Hey, Chase, before I let you go, let me ask you, you know, what have your reps and your people told you kind of about this weekend, what to expect, what to be ready for in terms of, you know, the upside, the downsides of ways, you know, the way things can go, particularly with the uncertainty that we have here with this NFL labor situation?
You know, honestly, it's just been, you know, act like you know what's going on, and just be ready for an opportunity, because, you know, I'd rather be prepared for an opportunity than never get one. And that's kind of what I'm at. You know, I'm doing stuff every day as though I'm going in the first round. You know, that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. So if I do get a chance sometime down the road and all this stuff gets figured out and guys like us can get a chance, just, you know, go prove somebody right if they want to take you.
All right, Chase, thanks a lot for giving us this time in this important weekend in your life, and we want to wish you luck. Hopefully we can hear your name called sometime today or tomorrow.
All right, well, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the call.
All right, best of luck.
All right, that is Chase Reynolds, very productive running back out of Montana University. Small school back, but very, very productive, particularly during his sophomore and junior seasons combined, I believe, for over 3,000 yards just in those 2 years alone. Ralph, only, as we said with Chase, only one running back was selected in the draft yesterday. I know both of us are big Ryan Williams fans. Mr. Lesore from Illinois is also on the board. You know, Rev, which one do you expect to go first? And, you know, would you be surprised if William lasts more than a few picks?
I think a guy like Ryan Williams is going to be probably the first guy to go out of these remaining running backs. I think he offers an interesting skill set as a guy that can cut on a dime. He's got that elusiveness that you look for. You know, one of the guys I like comparing him to is like D'Angelo Williams. I think he has that type of elusiveness, that type of lateral agility to you know, he's got that type of wiggle to get out of the way of defenders. But he also has that toughness to lower his head and gain the tough yards when necessary in third and one situations, in short yardage and goal line situations. And he catches the ball well also. So I think Ryan Williams is definitely the next guy to go. And then if you look past that, you know, Michael Lesore is a guy that probably isn't as spectacular as Williams is. He might not be that big play threat that Williams is, but he's a bigger back. He's a guy that just he just barrels through guys. I think he's a guy that could probably handle a big workload if needed. If he needs to carry the ball 20 times a game, I think he could certainly do that. And then, you know, once you get past those two guys, to me, it's a mixed bag as far as, you know, what the preferences are, you know, in terms of those individual teams out there and what they're looking for in a running back.
Well, how about, you know, not somebody that's going to barrel over people, but somebody that could be a lightning bolt and an electrifying big play man that we think is one of the super sleepers in this draft, Tywan Jones, yet another small school guy. You just wrote a column about him and his potential.
Well, yeah, the thing with Tywan Jones is that he's got some durability issues. He did get hurt, but his issues weren't debilitating. He didn't suffer any major knee injuries. So this guy has some real big-time speed and elusiveness when this and acceleration. And that's what really stands out to me is his acceleration. Within one or two steps, this guy will just blow by you and go all the way. To me, I think at the next level, he's a committee-type back. You give him the ball, you give him like maybe like 10 to 15 touches in the game, and I think this guy could be an explosive weapon, especially if you pair him up with a guy like, let's just say, I'm just thinking out loud here,
But, you know, if he ends up on a team like the Atlanta Falcons where they have a bigger back like a Michael Turner, and Michael Turner gets the ball and keeps pounding it up the middle and pounding it up the middle time after time, and then you bring in a guy like Taiwan Jones as kind of that changeup.
Bam,
that,
like a lightning bolt.
That could just totally take a defense for a loop right there. And you got a big play artist right there, a guy that, you know, out of nothing could give you like an 85-yard touchdown.
Yeah, that would be some intriguing place, you know, especially if you got that kid on turf, wherever it might be. You could be talking about a lot of big long runs and a lot of big plays. You know, he's our number four back. I think we have him rated higher than anybody else. I don't think anybody's got him up there that high. And then after that, I mean, Rev, it's tough. You mentioned it. There's a slew of guys, you know, that are projected to go in the second or third round, more likely in the third round, guys like Deion Lewis and Jordan Todman out of the Big East, a couple of Big 12 guys, and Daniel Thomas, who I'm a big fan of. I think he's getting a little underrated because he wasn't able to perform at 100% during this process. Also, DeMarco Murray out of the Big 12, who I think, you know, has his deficiencies as a runner, but is an absolutely fantastic wide receiver, runs very crisp routes, has great balance, unbelievable hands. A couple of little guys, 5'7 guys that are both under 200 pounds, and Jacquizz Rodgers out of Oregon State, Kendall Hunter out of Oklahoma State, and you have a guy like an Allen Bradford, who's the, you know, the other end of the spectrum, 240-pounder. I don't know why. I know you agree with this. It seems like NFL teams devalue these big backs. They don't really have a lot of use for them. They always seem to slip, in my opinion, in the draft. And then two really intriguing guys that we have given fourth-round grades, but I think maybe have a better chance to be every-down backs than some of the guys we have ranked ahead of them, and that's Alex Green out of Hawaii and DeLong Carter out of Syracuse, a couple of guys that are in those mid-220 pounds.
You know, it's interesting. You bring up the fact that maybe sometimes those bigger backs are devalued, and I think that if I'm a team out there looking for a running back and, you know, I'm looking at a guy who's 230 pounds, 225 pounds, what I want out of him is the ability to catch the football, because if you do have that, then your offense becomes less predictable. When you do, you know, let's just say, for instance, like the New York Giants, when you have Brandon Jacobs out there, he's not a big receiving threat. So if he's in the backfield, I mean, you're not going to expect him to catch, you know, a five-yard pass and turn it into a 20-yard gain or a big-time play. So to me, I think that if you do have a bigger back and he's able to catch the football, I think that adds a lot of value. Now, you bring up a guy like DeMarco Murray. He is big in terms of size. He's definitely bigger than the average size running back.
213 pounds.
And 213 pounds, but he's not your classic pile driver either.
No.
He doesn't have that leg drive, you know, where he can just, you know.
He's got some guns, though.
He does have the guns. He does have the athletic ability and the speed and the explosiveness and all of that. But he's not going to push a lot of piles. And he really, in reality, you don't want him to do that because he is a little on the fragile side as well. You know, I think,
and he's not just a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. When you talk about DeMarco Murray, he's somebody that can swing out, line up outside as a wide receiver. As I said, I mean, the kid runs better routes than a lot of the wide receivers that are in this draft. All right, Rev, let's move on to the wide receivers. Our next guest is on the line, and I know this is one of your favorites here, Penn State Nittany Lion, Ali Agbu, a local kid from this area here in the tri-state area. Ali, thanks a lot for joining us today. How's everything going?
Of course, no problem. Thanks for having me. You know, everything's going well. I'm just, hanging around with some friends and just relaxing and, you know, just trying to see what happens these next couple of days.
I hear you. So how you feeling now? What's the mood there? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Are there butterflies in the stomach?
Not yet, you know, only because I'm a late-round free agent guy, so I would say I'm more, you know, relaxed today, and I'm pretty sure when tomorrow comes around, I'll be a little more hesitant.
Hey, Ali, let me ask you, following up on that, you know, you bring up the fact that you're projected as a late-round guy, a free agent guy. Obviously, you know, your people are talking to you and kind of advising you. What have they told you in terms of what you should expect this weekend and how you should deal with things, particularly in light of the fact that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of what the free agent situation is going to be with the lockout?
Really, my agent's just saying, you know, just take it for what it is. You know, if I'm lucky enough to get drafted, then, you know, we can celebrate and you know, move on to a team, and you know, now I've accomplished my dream. But if I don't, you know, just carry that chip on your shoulder and know that you have to work hard this whole summer so that when the lockout is over, you can get picked up and show teams why they should have drafted you. You know, so I'm just more or less just taking these next couple of days, you know, for what it is. You know, it's a draft, and you know, it's not written in stone to say that if you're not drafted, you won't be great, or if you are drafted, you will be great. You know, it's just something that, as a kid, you know, you look forward to being drafted or having your name, you know, roll across the screen. So, yeah, you know, this is probably a dream come true, or just, you know, extra motivation, you know, even if I don't get drafted.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, last night when we got home from the draft, you know, you watch the NFL Network, and lo and behold, Kurt Warner, potential Hall of Famer, was an undrafted guy. So it definitely doesn't mean that, you know, it's the end of your career if you don't get drafted. It's still, there's a lot of guys that pan out after that as well. And, Ollie, let me ask you on that note. You said, you know, wait, work the summer. So it doesn't sound like there's any thought there of could you play in another league. It's definitely wait to see what happens with the NFL. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's definitely wait for the NFL. You know, it's one of those things where I know I'm good enough to play in the NFL, and I'm going to wait on my options and really stick to the script and not try to get off, you know, kilter and try to do something elsewhere.
And we're talking to Ollie Ogbu, Penn State Nittany Lion defensive lineman. Last year, he made 48 tackles, including 8.5 for a loss for the big fella.
Hey, Ollie, Ralph here. You know, did you watch the draft at all yesterday? Were you glued to the television set as we were? And, you know, most importantly, did you feel good, bad, or indifferent that 12 defensive linemen were chosen in the first round?
You know, yeah, I was definitely glued, you know, to the screen. I think every year I watch it, you know, I'm a big football buff, and I love to watch football and the draft and, you know, NFL Channel, you know. So me watching the draft, it was just like, you know, nothing special. You know, I watch it every year with a few friends. So, yeah, I watched it. And for me, you know, seeing that many D linemen go early, you know, really is good for me, you know, in the sense of, you know, if a lot of guys get picked, you know, my name just may run into a room and a buzz may start, and, you know, that's how everything starts when you're getting drafted. So I think if there were only a few linemen getting drafted, you know, in the first round, I would have had a problem with that, you know, but I think it's all positive from here.
Yeah, Ollie, you know, since you brought up that you were glued to the TV, I love to hear that. I love to hear players that are fans as well. You're a Big Ten guy. A lot of those linemen, as Ralph mentioned, 12 linemen, a lot of them are Big Ten guys. Corey Legit out of Illinois. You had Kerrigan out of Purdue, Claiborne out of Iowa, Hayward out of Ohio State, J.J. Watt went 11 from Wisconsin. Even your former teammate Phil Taylor, who's now a Baylor former Nittany Lion, went in the first round. Did anything surprise you? Were you like, wow, I can't believe that guy went that high, or I can't believe that guy went that low out of that group?
I want to say no. Are you talking about just the lineman or anybody in general?
Well, more so the lineman, but if not the lineman, you can throw something else at us.
I would say no, just because I've watched, you know, even when our coach has us watch, you know, a film, we watch film on different D linemen, and we watch film on different O linemen going against the D linemen. So I personally knew how good Hayward and Phil and J.J. Watt and Kerrigan, I knew how good those guys were, you know, because we have to watch film on linemen that we play, and they so happen to have played that team, you know. So I knew all these guys were great first, you know, great talents, and they, you know, they had a possibility of going to the first round. So I'm definitely not surprised at any defensive lineman that are in the first round, especially Big Ten guys, because, you know, we know how to rush the passer and stop the run.
Hey, Ollie, you know, you were a three-year starter and a productive guy as well throughout your college career, quick off the snap, you maintained leverage. So, I mean, do you ever ask yourself, why is it that you're being mentioned as a late-round guy, as a seventh-round guy, instead of, you know, being mentioned as a mid-round guy? I know that we, you know, have you ranked as a fifth-round guy, but, I mean, do you ever feel like you're being shortchanged in terms of the projections out there?
Well, I've talked to a lot of scouts and a lot of, you know, people evaluated me, and I would say my size really is one thing that's hindering me from being, you know, a mid-round to early guy, you know, just because I'm only about 6'1 and, you know, 300 pounds, and I played a little lighter in college, you know. So I would say nowadays they want a guy that's, you know, over 300 and, you know, he's a little bit taller, around 6'3", 6'4". So, you know, obviously my size has a lot to do with it, you know, which I'm not mad at. You know, I still play well and I'm still productive, so I guess I just have to see what happens.
Yeah, and, you know, one last one for me, Ollie, is, You know, whether you end up in a 4-3 scheme or a 3-4 scheme, ultimately, what do you feel is going to determine how successful you're going to be as a professional football player?
I would just say what got me to this point, you know, my work ethic. You know, I think I'm a pretty hard worker, and I love to watch film and dissect linemen and see what their strengths are and their weaknesses and game plan, you know, because that's all I have. You know, I'm not a Phil Taylor where I'm 6'5", 380 pounds, where I can just throw guys around. You know, I'm going to have to watch film and key on his weaknesses and, you know their strengths and know what they're trying to do and what their plan of attack is, you know, game in and game out. So I would say, you know, that really helped me play successfully my few years at Penn State, and I will continue to do that and just work hard and show the team that, you know, I'm a guy that can be a leader and also be a positive, you know, force in the locker room and not bring any negative attention, just, you know, have fun and enjoy the NFL.
Hey, Ollie, let me ask you this as my final question. I know you're a New York kid born in Staten Island. You know, we're New York guys here, and you sound like somebody that's definitely a football fan. So I want to find out, are you a all-around sports fan? And if so, what are your favorite New York teams in, you know, the main sports, football, baseball, basketball?
Well, I'm definitely a New York fan, so I would have to say the Knicks. And no, I'm not a front runner. I just, you know, didn't tell everybody how much of a Knicks fan I was until we started playing well. But I would say I'm a Yankees fan for baseball. You know, I don't watch too much baseball, but I watch enough to know about the game and the logistics of everything. And, you know, I'm definitely a Yankees fan and, you know, Knicks fan. And I don't watch too much hockey. And for New York, I'm a Jets, Giants, and Bills fan. You know, I think I just love watching football, you know, and I don't have a real favorite team. So why not rep, you know, where you're from? So I think I'm just a big fan of those three teams. I just love to watch football.
That whole answer sounded good, except for the Yankee part, Ollie.
A couple of Queens guys, you got to understand that.
Yeah, I understand.
All right, buddy, thanks a lot for giving us some time, and we definitely want to wish you luck, and hopefully, you know, sometime we'll hear your name called before the draft ends.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, best of luck.
And that is Ali Agbu from the University of Penn State, defensive lineman. And we're going to just keep moving right along here as our next guest is on the line as well. And we're staying on the defensive side of the ball. And that is Mr. Shiloh Keough. That name flows, that's for sure. Safety from the University of Idaho. Shiloh, how's it going today?
It's good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm excited. I'm pretty happy. You know, draft, you know, we love the draft here. This is like Christmas for us year in and year out. And, you know, on that note, are you a guy that's into the draft? Do you like to watch it as well? You know, were you tuned in last night?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I wasn't predicted to go first day or anything. So I'm back home, you know, and I was kind of picking up the house, getting ready for, you know, today or tomorrow, you know, because I'm going to have a lot of family coming through. But, you know, I definitely tuned in, and, you know, I was just happy and excited for all those guys that, you know, had the opportunity to hear their name picked, you know, and just hope and pray that I'll be able to enjoy that same feeling that they shared last night.
Yeah, Shiloh, you brought up that you weren't necessarily projected as being a first-round guy, but I think you are projected as being one of the better safeties. What are your people telling you in terms of where you should expect to go?
You know, from everything I've been talking to with coaches and scouts and with my agent, you know, they're pretty sure that, you know, I'll be fourth round for sure, you know, and they just said that, hey, be prepared and be ready to either go before or after. So, you know, that's the thing with the NFL draft. You never know. You know, there's a lot of guys that got drafted yesterday that probably didn't think they'd go yesterday, and there's guys that thought they would go yesterday that did go, you know. So you just got to be – you got to expect the worst and be ready for anything.
Hey, Shiloh, Ralph Mancini here. You know, players in the NFL are bigger, stronger, and a lot faster than what you're going to see in college on a week-to-week basis. And you're the type of guy who likes to hit people. What are you looking forward to the most as you prepare to play against some of the most athletically gifted people on the planet?
You know, what I'm looking forward to is being able to compete against those guys, you know, the most athletic guys in the world. These guys are the cream of the crop, and there's a reason they're in the NFL already, and to be able to share the field with them and to be able to, you know, make big plays against these big time names, it's always been a dream of mine, you know, and it's so awesome that the guys that I grew up watching are still playing, and to see that I'm going to have the chance to possibly be on the field either with them or against them is just such a dream come true, you know. So that's definitely the thing I'm looking forward to the most, is just being able to compete with, you know, the greatest athletes in the world.
And, you know, Shiloh, watching you play, you know, the one thing that I always liked about you is you're a guy that can wrap up ball carriers, which I think is sort of like a lost art, especially among defensive backs. Well, why do we see so many missed tackles on the college and pro levels week after week? What do you think? Why are we seeing like so many plays where, you know, the guy's got like two arms around somebody and he just misses him?
I think it's because people get, you know, satisfied with just doing their part, you know, just doing their job, useless, especially in the defensive back, you know, part of the field. I feel like DBs tend to just say, hey, my job is to guard the pass. That's it. You know, you don't pay me, or you didn't sign me to make tackles. You made me, you came after me to, you know, deflect the pass and make sure that there's no deep balls thrown. You know, so I feel like a lot of people kind of feel like that, and it's a tendency that has shown to grow. And, you know, so for me, it's easy. You know, I like throwing my nose in the middle of things. You know, I'm a physical guy. You know, I think a lot of guys lack that physical nature, and that's why you see that tendency all the time.
Hey, Shiloh, you know, you definitely have that reputation, and that's something that should be discussed, but I think – somewhat because of that, I think your cover skills are a little bit underrated. What do you think?
You know, a lot of people say that, you know, and that's definitely one of the things I have to work on. But, you know, hey, I miss tackles too. You know, there's times that guys break my tackles and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's so many parts of my game that I still need to crisp up and work on, you know. But, you know, if you watch the film and you break me down, you know, there's a lot of good things that I do, and there are things that I don't do as well. But I think if you do that for anybody, if you break down anybody's film, you're going to find little parts in his game that might, you know, lack in certain areas, you know. And that's the thing about breaking down film, you know. Sometimes you get a DVD with only two games on it, you know. So that's all they know is what they've seen on those two games. You know, whereas if you're a guy that comes out and you watch every single game, you kind of get a better feel of how a player plays. And, you know, I feel like all around my game is a real solid game.
That is really a fantastic point, I think. I mean, there's, you know, 250 guys are going to get drafted, but teams are trying to scout 450, 500 guys. Can you really realistically watch, you know, every game of every player? It's not really that realistic to do it. I don't think even an NFL team has that capability. Shiloh, you know what's interesting to me was, can you speak on this? You know, your 40 time wasn't necessarily the fastest time, but in that short shuttle, you did a fantastic job. I think you had the best number among the safeties, and you did better than a lot of the top corners. So speak to that value and talk about the importance of, you know, not just running a straight line speed, but being able to change directions.
You know, as a safety, you know, you have a lot of responsibilities. You got to cover a lot of ground, both behind you and in front of you. And being able to have that quick pitch, you know, that quick twitchness in your system, being able to change directions at a quick pace, you know, that's something that I take pride in. And, you know, no, I'm not the fastest guy straight ahead, but I can get from point A to B and even to C quicker than, you know, anybody else out there. And I take pride in that, you know, and I work on that because I know my you know, straight ahead speed isn't the greatest, you know. So if I understand what my opponent is doing against me and react the way I do, I know that I'm going to get to him before he even realizes I'm going to be there. And that's how I make most of my plays, you know. And it just goes to show that, you know, there's some guys that are phenomenal track athletes, and then there's some guys that are just good at playing football. And, you know, I feel like that's what I do. You know, there's a reason why I play this sport. It's because, you know, I'm good I'm good at football.
Football.
You know, I'm not good at track. I didn't spend my whole life doing track. You know, I spent my whole life playing football, and it's so far, you know, it's paid off for me. You know, I've always been, you know, more on the quicker side than the faster side, and you know, I just take pride in that. You know, going into the combine, I knew I wasn't going to be a fast 40 guy, but it was my goal to be the quickest guy there, and to have the fastest 5-10-5 and the fastest 3-cone drill, and I was able to do that, and I was very happy with myself.
Yeah, Shiloh, and on that note, you know, talk about your versatility. I know that they even lined you up at linebacker from time to time back in college, and, you know, you weren't only just like a good special teams player, you were an outstanding special teams player. So talk about a little bit about your versatility as well.
Well, you know, I feel like going into this next level, you know, they tell you that, you know, you don't expect to come in and just start. You know, usually you got to find your way onto the team through special teams, and I really took pride in that, you know, my whole career in college, because I knew that if I got a shot that, you know, right away, if I can, you know, turn some heads on special teams, then eventually I'd be able to see my way onto the field, you know. So took pride in practices at Idaho during special teams, and I realized that, you know, if I understand the systems and understand things, the way things are supposed to go on special teams, you know, it will give us not only a chance to create big plays for our offense and defense, but it will give more looks, you know, more film to watch when the NFL scouts come marching my way, you know. And it did. It paid off, you know, and a lot of guys talk to me about special teams and that they're very happy about the fact that I can do all kinds of things. And, you know, it's just another situation where I've been able to open this door, you know, a little more for myself, being able to be so versatile, to be able to return kicks and punts, and to be able to you know, be the PP and make passes and fakes and stuff like that. You know, a lot. I feel like, you know, those are extra things I could put on a highlight tape to send a coach or NFL scout, you know. And so it's just, you know, the coaches have distilled it into my mind that, you know, this is definitely the way you got to go about doing it, you know, because you're not the fastest guy, the biggest guy, the strongest guy, you know. So you got to show them what makes you the best guy out there. And that versatility, I think, is what does it.
Hey, Shiloh, I got one more for you before we let you go. And, you know, speaking of watching a lot of tape on different players, I'm sure a couple of guys who are projected today, you've seen a lot of tape of over the last couple of years of Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback out of Nevada, as well as their tight end, Virgil Green. Can you give us a scouting report and break those two guys down a little bit for us?
Phenomenal players, man. You know, they went through a different system. You know, not too many people run that pistol offense, but they're playmakers, man. Virgil Green is just one of the biggest, most solid route runners and just physical tight ends that I've had to go up against, you know. And I've been able to play against him for a while now, and he's just a solid player. And, he always seems to find the open field, and he's a phenomenal blocker as well. You know, that's one thing about a tight end, and especially I feel like going into the NFL, that you got to not only you got to be able to run nice solid routes and catch the ball, but you got to be a great blocker. And you know, as for Colin, I mean, what an athlete! You know, he's a different style of quarterback, but he makes great solid throws, good decisions. You know, he's definitely matured over the years and become a great quarterback. And I mean, his speed is just ridiculous. You know, every year we play Nevada, that's one of my favorite games, because, you know, he wears number 10, I wear number 10, so I always feel like, okay, it's a battle, who's the better number 10 type of deal. And you know, he always seems to just break tackles and just outrun everybody. That's one thing about that guy. You know, he's one of those X-factor type guys, because if he ever finds daylight, you know, there's a chance he's going the distance. And it's funny, if you break him down and you watch tape, you know, he might not be the cleanest in his feet work and stuff, but, you know, he's one of those guys that if he feels pressure and he gets outside of the pocket, you know, there's all kinds of things that he can make happen. And chances of you guys scoring is just phenomenal because of that speed he has and the threat, the fact that if people see him scrambling, you know, everyone's like, oh, okay, here we go. I got to come off my guy. I got to make sure we secure this tackle because this guy is freakish. And that's when he'll just make a nice dump off and get you yards that way, you know. So he's just a great athlete. You know, both of those guys are just phenomenal. And I wish them all the luck in the world.
Yeah, without a doubt, a couple of great athletes there from Nevada. But we think you're a pretty good guy out of Idaho as well, Shiloh. We got you with the second round grade. So hopefully you will hear your name called tonight. If not, I'm sure it'll be early tomorrow. Thanks a lot for giving us some time. We want to wish you luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And you guys have a good one.
All right, great. Thanks again.
Bye.
All right. Thanks a lot there to Shiloh, and great job by all the guests. We started off with our man Bo Marchant with a little surprise cameo appearance, followed by Howard Cross, former New York Giants Super Bowl champion, kind of helping us out, breaking down some of the SEC guys, including four guys from his alma mater, the University of Alabama, who did a great job there. And just talking SEC guys in general, what five out of the top six picks came out of the SEC. We also had running back Chase Reynolds from Montana, Missouri State offensive lineman David Arkin, as well as defensive lineman Ali Agbu from the University of Penn State, who joined us today. Rev, as I said at the top, some of these guys might go today. Some guys might go tomorrow. A couple of these guys might not get drafted, and it'll be, you know, interesting to see what happens for those guys moving forward after that. But it was interesting to hear Agbu say, you know, his mentality is the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And we see guys all the time being picked as sixth round or seventh round picks, and they turn out to be valuable members of their teams, real, you know, week-to-week contributors. And, you know, the only difference between a sixth or seventh round guy and a second or third round guy is the fact that the sixth or seventh round guy, when he gets into training camp, he's a little bit more under the gun. He's going to have to show something immediately. And he doesn't just have to be the type of guy that, you know, just blends in. He has to make plays. He has to make spectacular plays that's going to make him stand out and make some of the coaches say, hey, wait a second. Did you see Mr. So-and-so jump that route? Did you see Mr. So-and-so beat the offensive tackle on that sack, on that pressure? You know, so that's the thing with these guys. You know, when you're picked a little bit lower, a team doesn't have a big amount of money, or doesn't have a major investment that they've made in you. So you don't have like that. You're not afforded that time and that patience that maybe like a higher round guy will be afforded. So, you know, a guy like Ali Agbu or even a Chase Reynolds, if they get drafted later on, they know that they have to come in there and they have to kill it.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, all these guys sound like really well-spoken, bright kids that have their head on their shoulders, and they get what's going on this weekend. And, you know, rooting for them all to get drafted. But, Rev, we got a little over 20 minutes, and we still got a few more guys to cover in terms of key players. So let's try to run through the rest of these positions, as we got to do O-line, D-line, linebacker, and DBs in terms of guys that could go in day two. Offensive tackle, depending on what you call James Carpenter, there was either five or six offensive tackles went off the board yesterday. Who do you like in the next group of guys? I mean, we got guys like Orlando Franklin and Ben Agilana, who are similar guys in terms of are they guards, are they tackles at the next level. You got James Brewer out of Indiana. I know you also like Marcus Gilbert out of Florida. Jason Pinkston's another guy that we should expect to hear today. Offensive tackle, which are the top two guys maybe that you like going today?
You know, one guy that I've liked for a while now is Orlando Franklin out of Miami. Now, he's a guy that's versatile. He could play at the guard position. He could play at tackle. Probably at the next level, he's going to be more of a right tackle than a left tackle. But the thing that I like about him is his physicality, the way he just blows people off the ball, and he does have the sheer size in order to do that. Comes from a great program. And then you mentioned a guy like Marcus Gilbert from Florida. I think he's a guy that also brings some versatility to the table in the fact that he played over at left tackle and he played at right tackle as well. He's got a huge wingspan and a guy that's been very productive at the college level. I was actually shocked that James Carpenter was chosen as high as he was, and I had both Orlando Franklin and Marcus Gilbert ranked ahead of Mr. Carpenter.
Yeah, I mean, in our overall rankings, we did have Carpenter higher, but I hear what you're saying, Rev. I mean, I think I had Gilbert going on my mock today to the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, they didn't grab that O-lineman in the first round. I think they would love to grab a guy like him in the second round. And with Orlando Franklin, I think Washington's a great fit because you mentioned he could play right tackle, he could play guard. Washington has a need at both spots.
Yeah.
So, you know, that versatility, the fact that, hey, if he is a tackle, which is considered of greater value, fantastic. Let's make him a right tackle. If he's not, hey, we can use a guard anyway. So it's kind of, you know, a win-win situation regardless of which is his ultimate position at the next level.
Yeah, and when you're making the team as an offensive lineman in general, what's really going to work in your favor is your ability to fill in at multiple spots. If you come in as a reserve, they're going to need you to fill in at multiple spots, and that's what's really going to win you a job a lot of times.
All right, now moving inside to the guard position, there's guys like Clint Bowling from Georgia, our guy John Moffitt, who I know both of us really like a lot, from the University of Wisconsin, 320-pounder, mauler, bigger than most of these other guards that are on the list. Stephen Schilling, another Big Ten kid from Michigan. DeMarcus Love probably has the most potential out of all these guys, but, you know, he's still got a lot of work to do. But in terms of just athletic ability, you know, a lot of people projected him as one of the top left tackles heading into the season. Now, if you bring that kind of talent to the guard position, there is the upside. Once again, as so often it happens with these boom-bust guys, high ceiling, low floor, and then a couple of smaller school guys like our man David Arkin, who was on early in the show, out of Missouri State, as well as Will Rackey from Lehigh. Who do you think are the guards that we may see go off in rounds two or three today that you like?
Well, I would definitely start off with John Moffitt out of Wisconsin. You're talking about a guy that has the size definitely at about between 6'4 and 6'5 and well over 300 pounds. He checks in about 319 pounds. A guy who is that type of mauler, he's got good pedigree, comes from that Wisconsin team that just, you know, focuses on running the football. And so, and that's what you want out of your guard. I mean, you know, we talk about those tackles being athletic enough to defend in pass protection, I mean, to block a lot of those speed rushers and pass protection, but the guards have to be guys that are going to be willing and able to do the job and be physical in the running game, and I think John Moffitt gives you that. And then I love David Arkin as well. He mentioned it himself. He's a guy who's aggressive. He's got a great motor. He's got experience of playing at the tackle position. He's a guy that could just pancake people, a guy that's got a very high tempo about him. Will Rackey is a guy who's very strong, very heavy-handed, plays with a lot of leverage. He's a guy that I think might get drafted probably in the third round. And then DeMarcus Love. Hey, you know what? We saw him just not do too well in the Senior Bowl. He was exposed as a tackle, and he's not very athletic, or I should say he's not athletic enough to play the tackle position.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that he's not a good player.
No.
As a matter of fact, you know, he's a guy that loves the game of football. He is a good competitor. And he's a guy that grabs a good grip on guys, and once he gets a hold of you, he's not going to let you go. He latches on. But again, he's more of a phone booth type player, so I think at the guard position, it would make a lot more sense to draft Love to be more of that interior guy as opposed to being an exterior guy.
All right, and since we have Mr. Pouncey rated as a guard, in our estimation, there were no centers drafted in the first round. You know, obviously a couple of guys that might go today is someone like a Christopher O'Dowd out of USC, great technician. Brandon Fuscow, our number three center, who I like a lot, moves very well, fantastic feet. But, Rev, the top two guys are Rodney Hudson, Steve Wisniewski, projected probably in the second round. Wisniewski maybe second or third. What's your take on those two guys quickly?
Those are the two guys that stand out to me. You know,
yeah.
Wisniewski is a guy who is very intelligent. I've seen him actually take over games, especially that one game against Northwestern where he just led the way for Evan Royster. To me, he's a guy that is not only very smart, not only has good bloodlines. You can remember his uncle Steve Wisniewski played for the Raiders, but he's a guy that finishes his blocks. Probably more of a zone blocker, but I love this kid, and I think he's the top center in this draft. And then Rodney Hudson is another guy who's just flawless in terms of his technique. Not a big guy, is probably like somewhere in the area of 285 to 290,
But he's a guy who just doesn't make any mistakes out there. Very intelligent, very skilled player, a guy that doesn't allow any sacks, who doesn't make a lot of mistakes out there. And, you know, as a center, you got to be able to make a lot of those line calls. You need to be very smart, very precise. And I think that a guy like Rodney Hudson is the type of guy that could really do well at that position.
All right, defensive tackle, two guys that I really like a lot, and I think could end up being two steals in day two here, are Marvin Austin out of North Carolina, Stephen Paye out of Oregon State. For different reasons, they slipped with Austin. He didn't play last year, had some character issues, somewhat of an underachiever out of out of UNC for his first 3 years. I think with a big season, he could have been taken a lot higher in this draft. I thought he was going to go in the first round. I thought he would have been a great fit as a three technique in Chicago. He's still on the board. The Oregon State kid, it's more of a health issue. Rev, how high do you see these guys going? Do you think they should go pretty quickly here in day two?
Well, you know, as far as Marvin Austin goes, I think he needs to go within the next 5 to 10 picks. I mean, I think he's that talented, and we spoke about him yesterday. And the other guy you brought up, Stephen Paye, a guy that had who got hurt this past season, but I think he's also a solid second-round pick. And then for the guys that follow these two players that we just mentioned, I'm looking at size. I'm looking at guys that are big enough to play in that 3-4 scheme. More and more teams are moving over to that 34-4.
Not many are there.
Not many are there, but there are two guys that stick out to me, a couple of big guys, Jarvis Jenkins out of Clemson, 6'4", 311 pounds, a guy that's been versatile throughout his college career and has been productive, has a good motor. And then another guy, an interesting guy, is Jarrell Casey out of USC. Probably not as tall as a lot of these guys, about 6'2", but he is a legitimate 300 pounds. Another guy that I think if you employ him as a nose tackle, could do some damage. And finally, a small school guy, Kendrick Ellis. You want to talk about size? 346 pounds, but this kid can move. If you watch them at the Texas versus the Nation game, he actually dropped back into zone coverage, which is just amazing for a guy of his dimensions.
Yeah, Kendrick is a kid that obviously has some of those character question marks. Originally went to South Carolina, had to transfer to Hampton, missed the first game of the year there. I think he could be a real sleeper here. I'm not sure exactly when teams are going to look to grab him, but if somebody can nab him in the third round, a 3-4 team, I think that would be a fantastic pick. A couple other guys just to keep an eye out for. Terrell McLean out of South Carolina, a little undersized. You got Lawrence Guy, who I think is intriguing as a potential 3-4 end with that 6-4 length. Then you got the quickness of Drake Nevis out of LSU, and another potential nose tackle. Probably will go tomorrow, but Chris Neal, you never know, could sneak into the third round because of that value as a third rounder. Rev, defensive ends, as we move along in the positions, Daquan Bauer is still on the board. I mean, I know everybody said he's doing the slip and slide. We thought that meant from being, you know, a top five pick to a number 20 pick in that range. Now he fell completely out of the first round. How far could he fall, and do you think he's still the best guy on the board?
I think he is the best guy on the board, especially at this position, but I mean, you have to take into account his knee issues. And not only are they saying that, you know, down the road, maybe like, you know, in another 3, 4, 5 years that, you know, he could develop some sort of like arthritic condition in his knee. But they're also saying that there's a possibility where he might need microfracture surgery. And that's sort of like the death knell for a lot of these defensive players, especially linemen, where if you come up with these knee problems and, you know, being a good lineman is all a matter of, you know, the type of leverage you can gain out there. It's a game of leverage. And if you don't have your knees, I mean, you're pretty much useless out there. And, you know, even best case scenario with his knee issues, even if everything checks out, you know, maybe, you know, you don't know if 3 or 4 years down the road if this guy's totally going to break down on you. And even going in, even not even taking into account these knee issues, here's a guy that came in and wasn't very productive in his first couple of years, had about 4 sacks combined in his first 2 years in college, and then just finally exploded with 15 sacks this past season. So there are a lot of questions there. He's definitely the classic boom or bust type of pick.
Yeah, I'm really not sure what to make of this with the knee issues. I am not a doctor in real life, nor do I play one on the radio. And I wonder how much of this plays into the fact that, hey, if these five teams pass them, why should I take them? You know what I mean? I wonder if that comes into play a little bit. But we obviously eventually somebody's going to say, hey, let's roll the dice. Let's take a shot because, hey, we may get a top 10 talent somewhere in the 30s or the 40s.
And if you have a lot of picks to play with, you can't afford to take that gamble. But if you're a team like the New York Jets that doesn't have a lot of picks, you can't afford to really have a bust like that in the first round.
The team that's picking first today does have a lot of picks. There's a bunch of guys we could go over here, Rev, but Alan Bailey's a guy that was once rated a first-round guy. He's surely going to go today at some point. A guy that I like a lot is Christian Ballard, 286-pounder out of Iowa, played in the 4-3 defense, played inside and outside in that scheme. They moved him in and out a lot, very versatile kid. Because of that, I think he's going to be an ideal 5-technique, 3-4 defensive end at the next level. In my mock draft today, I had him going to the Dallas Cowboys, fit in that role, and I'm going to set you up. I know your man is Jabal Sheard out of Pittsburgh, defensive end, who when Greg Romeus, who could go today as well, if not tomorrow, went down, he really stepped it up and stepped up to the call as a linchpin to that defense.
Yeah, I just love Jabal Sheard, and I think he makes a lot of sense for a lot of these 3-4 teams out there that are looking for that hybrid type of guy. You mentioned his dimensions. He's about 6'3 and change, about 263 pounds. But on top of all that, he gives you great athleticism, change of direction. He gives you the ankle flexion and the ability to bend that you're looking for. And he's got great energy. And he did well against a lot of major teams out there. I mean, you want to watch some YouTube film? I mean, just type in that game that he had versus Miami where, he just was a terror on both sides. Going up against both the left tackle and the right tackle. So he made plays against guys like Orlando Franklin as well, a guy that keeps on coming, and he's got some pass rush moves to him. I think that this guy is one of the more underrated guys, and if you could get him in the second round, I think he could actually be a steal.
All right, Rev, we got less than 10 minutes to go before round two starts. Outside linebackers, 3-4 guys. I know Brooks Reed was the guy that a lot of people thought might sneak into the first round. Is still in that mix in terms of being an early second-round guy. Who knows? Outside linebacker is a need for New England. He could be the first guy off the board today. Justin Houston's another possibility. I think that could go early today. I believe I had him going one of those early picks in my mock draft team needing a 3-4 outside linebacker. The kid out of Georgia, I had him going to the Buffalo Bills with the 34th pick. There's a couple other guys. How about Dante Mock, who we spoke to a couple of weeks ago, phenomenal athlete, off the charts athleticism, 42-inch vertical, almost 11-foot broad jump, 4.44 40-yard dash. Sam Acho is another converted 4-3 defensive end. But the guy you like, I'm setting you up again, is Fresno State man Chris Carter.
Yeah, Chris Carter, who we supposed to talk to. I don't know what happened to him. Where are you, Chris? Hello. But, I like this kid a lot. You talk about a guy who's got that change of direction skill that you're looking for at this position. He's a little bit undersized. He's not one of those 6'4", 270-pound guys. He's more like in the 6'1", 6'2 range. But he's a guy that always got better year after year, and he's coming off a terrific season in which he not only had 11 sacks, he had 4 forced fumbles and was the WAC defensive player of the year, a guy who keeps on getting better. He's a student of the game. And what tells me that this guy's going to be a player at the next level is his ability to play through injury. I remember that game where he was playing with one hand. He had one hand in a cast and did a lot of damage versus a quality Wisconsin offensive line. Went through guys like Gabe Karimi, had 2 sacks in that ball game. So to me, I think Chris Carter is one of the more underrated defensive players in this draft, and he could be a really useful guy for a lot of the 3-4 teams out there.
Now, one of the names I didn't mention as a 3-4 outside linebacker is Akeem Ayers. That's because I think he's a better 4-3 fit, in my opinion. He's not that pure pass rushing type. He's flashed some pass rush ability. He's got some ability to cover. I think if there's one 3-4 team that could take him, it's New England, because they don't traditionally use their 3-4 outside linebacker. That's typically not a 14-15 sack guy for New England. They like a versatile type player, and I think that's kind of Ayers' strength. He's more of a jack of all trades than a master of you know, being a sack master or that type of thing. Bruce Carter is probably your best 4-3 outside linebacker. Also keep an eye out for my man from the Cuse, Doug Hogue. I think he's somebody that's very underrated. I have a feeling he's going to be like this year's Gary Guyton for me. I think he's somebody that's really coming on, was a running back for half of his career at Syracuse, really improved both of his years at linebacker, and I think his best football is ahead of him. Ralph, only three corners off the board yesterday, and I know you're a big fan of Mr. Ross I. Dowling. You thought maybe he should have gone yesterday, I think, in the first round, if not somebody that goes early in round two.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Ross I. Dowling is that he comes with a lot of question marks in terms of his durability. He was a guy that was hurt a few times in college. But here's a guy that comes with a lot of size at about 6'2", a guy that's very fluid. He can flip those hips. And the thing that impresses me the most about Ross I. Dowling is his great leaping ability. I mean, this guy could jump out of the gym, and he can make plays, and he's very tall, quick feet, loose hips. I think if it weren't for those injury issues, I think this guy, you could have made an argument for him being a late first-round pick. And then, you know, some of the other guys out there, I know you're a big fan. Brandon Burton is a guy that we like, a very physical guy. Kendrick Burney, a very physical guy. And a guy that brings a lot of versatility, a lot of size, is Richard Sherman out of Stanford.
Yeah, very athletic kid too, 40-inch vertical. I'm also a huge, huge fan of Curtis Brown. I think he's going to go higher than people think. Almost a 40-inch vertical leap with a tremendous short shuttle time of 4-flat. Brandon Harris is another a player we're a fan of.
Yep.
Physical kid, plays bigger than his 194 pounds. Devon House with his 4.40 speed. Mr. Busta Scrine. and the leaders of the new school from the University of Chattanooga, Josh Thomas out of Buffalo, are a couple of small school guys that I think could go today. Also, Johnny Patrick, you mentioned Brandon Burton. How about Curtis Marsh out of Utah State? Rashard Carmichael, Chris Rucker from Michigan State. Are two more corners. I think we're going to see a lot of corners go here in the second
Definitely.
Or third round.
Definitely.
Haven't seen much in terms of the safety position, Ralph. Aaron Williams, Raheem Moore are kind of the consensus top two guys at safety.
Yeah, I think Aaron Williams projects as a free safety at the next level. Another guy that I like is Jared Tarrant out of Georgia Tech, a very versatile guy. He actually played cornerback. He's got good hands. He can cover the slot, and he gives you a lot of different options. Then also another guy who I think is very versatile in that he could play both free safety and strong safety is Mr. DeAndre McDaniel out of Clemson, another student of the game, a guy that studies and works very hard. He knows what's going on out there. He puts himself in the right position to make plays, to grab interceptions. He's got great ball skills. So those are some of the safeties I would be looking at.
Yeah, I think Aaron Williams and Raheem Moore, the two guys that are going to go in round two. Raheem Moore is that prototypical center field type guy. We had him on a couple of times. Other guys to look for here in the third round as possibilities are Tarrant, who you brought up, Marcus Gilchrist out of Clemson, Oklahoma's Quentin Carter, another kid who can play both safeties positions. You know, we've had him on as well. Our man Shiloh, who we had on earlier, maybe Tyler Sash from the University of Iowa. We have a caller that's been hanging with us for a little while, so why not? Let's close it out with the caller. Hey, caller, you're on the line. What's your final comment question that you have here as we round out this Draft Digest special?
All right, I just want to I'm from the Jersey area, so I'm a Rutgers fan. I just want to get your opinion on Joe Lefege. What do you think is going to get drafted, and what do you think he'll do in the NFL?
Well, Joe Lefege we have right now graded as a fifth-round guy, and thanks for hanging with us. I think he's got some potential. What I really like about Joe is, you know, he's not quite Devin McCourty as an overall all-around player, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But like McCourty, special teams dynamo.
Yeah.
The kid plays on every unit in special teams, every coverage unit. He can return. He can block kicks. He can tackle. So I think he's the kind of guy that when a special teams coordinator, sees the film, he's going to really lobby for a team to take him as a safety in those mid-rounds.
What I like about him is that he's very physical. He's a guy that could come in on the blitz. He's not afraid to get his nose dirty. And I think he has also some potential in terms of being a cover guy as well. So I think that, you know, if a team invests a fourth, fifth, or sixth-round pick in Joe Lefege, I think he's got significant upside because of his versatility and his ability to be a physical defensive back as well.
All right, caller, thanks for the question there. Great timing as we wrap up the safety. We get a safety question. Rev, we got less than a minute left here. Let me ask you this. New England Patriots, are they going to make a pick or are they going to trade this pick? What's going to happen here with that number 33? Is it going to be New England taking somebody or is it going to be Cincinnati selecting Andy Dalton?
I think the only way New England actually trades this pick is if they can get a first-round pick for next year.
All right, folks, thanks for being with us here. Be back with us tomorrow morning live from Radio City. Our man Rick Saratella is taking over day three of our draft coverage from Radio City. So check it out. Go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out my round two mock. Check out our final rankings for each position. You should have that laptop in front of you as Roger Goodell is making the calls. After you boo Roger Goodell, check out NFLDraftBible.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!